Welcome to Strictly Facts, a guide to Caribbean history and culture, hosted by me, Alexandria Miller. Strictly Facts teaches the history, politics, and activism of the Caribbean and connects these themes to contemporary music and popular culture. Wagwan people, I hope you're doing well. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Strictly Facts, a guide to Caribbean history and culture, and I'm your host, Alexandria Miller. I'm recording this episode just after presenting at the Caribbean Without Borders Conference at the University of Puerto Rico at Río Piedras, where I not only spoke about the impact and importance of Caribbean podcasts like Strictly Facts, but I also made some amazing connections, and I'm really excited for some future episodes I have in the works for you all. Nonetheless, it is still Women's History Month, and I wanted to share this story of a woman from Grenada, either the islands of Carriacou or Petite Martinique. We're not sure historically exactly where she was born. As you may remember from the solo episode about a month ago, what's in a name, geography, governance, and the grit of national identity, I spoke about islands like Carriacou and Petite Martinique that are part of Caribbean nations, in this case Grenada, but not named in the official nation's name. As I researched for that episode, I stumbled across a brief fact that shared that the two aforementioned islands were at one point majority owned by a free Black woman, Judith Philip, and her family. The line was as simple as that and didn't go into further detail on the time period or what may have contributed to her family's wealth. So I simply bookmarked the page for later, for, of course, hoping to look into it for this Women's History Month episode. When I eventually returned to Judith Philip's story and the story of her immediate family some weeks later, I was a bit surprised and had to really reflect on some assumptions we can be quick to draw about history and all of the intricacies that history brings to us. When I first read that Philip had owned a majority shares on the islands, the brief anecdote, again, didn't really share much about her beyond that. What I soon realized was Philip was a free, mixed-race woman born during the mid-18th century at what was really, you know, the start and sort of height of the transatlantic slave trade across the New World. Philip was born to Honor Philip, a French baker who moved to Grenada while it was still a French colony, hoping to build a fortune for himself that he really couldn't afford to do in France at the time. And Jeanette. Not much is known about Jeanette until after she marries Philip, but it is assumed that she was an enslaved Black woman owned by Philip and that Philip manumitted her after they began their relationship. I say relationship here a bit loosely, of course, because although they would eventually be married, there was an inherent power dynamic involved with Philip being a free white man and possibly her enslaver. And Jeanette, of course, an enslaved Black woman. There are countless stories of the horrors and abuses Black women faced at the time from Mary Prince from Bermuda, who was one of the first Black women to write an autobiography of her experience as a slave, and detailing those experiences to, of course, Harriet Jacobs in the U.S. South, who did the same thing some 30 years later. And so I wanted to be sure we don't discount the sexual violence and abuse of power that were critical parts of, you know, many slaves' experiences in the same ways that we oftentimes think of physical and psychological abuses that they faced in the New World. Nonetheless, together, Honor and Jeanette Philip amassed substantial wealth, owning and operating cotton and indigo plantations across Carriacou and Petite Martinique. Honor Philip passed away in the 1770s, bequeathing most of his fortune to Jeanette and their 8 children, Judith included being their eldest daughter. It is in the aftermath of Honor Philip's death that matriarch Jeanette Philip's story really comes to prominence due to the legal documents at the time. Jeanette and her children inherited Honor's property after his passing, and the matriarch continued to acquire property for the family estate, of which at one point a surveyor in 1784 recorded as 477 acres in Grenada's Dependency Islands. The Philip family wasn't the only free mixed-race family of the planter class at this time, but they were certainly one of the most prominent. Prior to Jeanette Phillips' death in 1788, her children had begun taking their own leadership positions in the family's estate. Judith Phillip was tasked with managing the family's largest plantation, Grand Anse, in Carriacou, to which she was in charge of over 200 slaves. Judith continued to be a front runner for the family after the Phillip matriarch passed away, not only taking full possession of plantations like Grand Anse, but also acquiring more land and slaves and serving as a broker of her siblings, who often bought and sold land exclusively from each other as some of her siblings' interests grew to other parts of the Caribbean, including Trinidad. Though the Phillip family, sans patriarch Arnor Phillip, were people of color, and their mother being a former slave, their rule as enslavers was not any different from the cruelties we typically associate with slavery. This is particularly to be noted, especially during the latter 18th century, when Spanish colonies declared that any self-manumitted marooned slaves would remain free in the Spanish Caribbean had they found some way to get there. Though it is written that the enslaved Black people Judith Phillip owned were quote-unquote less marked by the whip, she governed her plantations and those of her siblings with an iron fist. When one of her slaves, Jose, in June 1834, stabbed another slave from a neighboring plantation, his name was John Charles, and was sentenced to death, Judith was able to petition the colonial secretary to reduce Jose's sentence because she had the support of other local enslavers on nearby plantations. While some would note this as an impressive feat on Judith's behalf to persuade the colonial magistrate to gain support from white plantationers as well, especially as a free colored woman, and even reduce Jose's sentence, I think of it, and it's really reflective of Judith Phillips' position on power and race at the time, always choosing to side predominantly with the wealthier French and British enslavers and magistrates than the interest of the majority Black and mixed race people in the islands at the time. In fact, when Judith's younger brother Joaquin chose to support Fidon's rebellion and uprising to create a Black Republic in 1795 Grenada, as was being done concurrently in Haiti, the Phillip family publicly disparaged and separated themselves from Joaquin, even in the aftermath of the rebellion, when Joaquin was eventually captured and hanged in St. George's, Grenada. The remainder of Judith's life continued to be marked by significant social standing as one of the wealthiest enslavers in the colony of Grenada. She began a relationship with a British merchant, Edmund Thornton, and together they had five children. She even lived in London for some time, but continued to control her family's estate even when she was abroad. She aligned herself with key British officials and planters so that they not only sided with her interest, especially, you know, being a free woman of color and of French Catholic descent, but like her mother, Judith managed the land, slaves, and deeds of most of her family across Grenada, Carriacou, Petite Martinique, and Trinidad. And she was one of two and the only daughter to amass a fortune comparative to her father's. The decade before emancipation, it is reported that she owned 276 slaves. And when enslavers received reparations, and I hope you can tell my sarcasm there, after British emancipation in 1834, she received over £6,500 for her slaves and the plantation Grand Anse. Although Judith Phillips' story might be one atypical to share during Women's History Month, where we might think to highlight the achievements of women who have perhaps fought for equality of some sort, the truth is Judith Phillips is part of our very complicated colonial history. Her story and the story of her entire family highlight some important intersections and reflections on history that we don't always immediately think about. When again, I first read of Judith Phillip owning a majority stake in two Caribbean islands, I thought, wow, That's a story you don't hear of every day. And upon learning that she inherited and owned slaves, we could be quick to think of some of our assumptions to hope that, she was a free woman of color and that she would have just manumitted all of the other Black people on the island who her family owned. But as we know, this was not necessarily the story. Our histories, as important as they are, aren't always beautiful. And that's something we must also contend with as we continually explore who we are and where we come from. Judith Philip also marks some interesting points at the intersections of race and gender, where I found we might not always think of as well. We tend to think of enslavers as predominantly being white men and maybe secondarily white women, but how often do you consider free people of color and their support of the institution of slavery? There are several interesting thoughts I have on this story. For one, the weight of legal documents in place of, say, Judith Phillips' voice in letters, for instance. The fact that it seems that the Phillip family had a bit more freedom to do what they wanted to do and rise to greater prominence, being that they were living in smaller islands, not the mainland of Grenada. And of course, the changes of power going between French and British rule in Grenada, and the fact that Judith aligned herself with the interest of British enslavers and colonial magistrates so that she wouldn't face any cruelties as a free woman of color. There are some amazing books that help us to reconsider and push the boundaries of our knowledge, especially when it comes to race and gender during the transatlantic slave trade. First and foremost, I have to highlight Kit Cadling and Cassandra Pybus's Enterprising Women, Gender, Race, and Power in the Revolutionary Atlantic, through which all of what I've summarized today and much more on Judith Phillip and her family stems from. There are also books like Mercy Fuentes's Dispossessed Lives, Enslaved Women, Violence, and the Archive, and Jessica Marie Johnson's Wicked Flesh, Black Women, Intimacy, and Freedom in the Atlantic World, that are tremendous histories of Black women and women of color as they intersect, support, adapt, and challenge the systems of power, race, gender, slavery, and colonial rule at the time. And of course, I'll link those on the Strictly Facts syllabus for you all. In closing, I hope this episode provided some food for thought for you this Women's History Month, and that you walked away with a little bit of a changed perspective. As always, be sure to support the show, leave us a rating on your favorite podcast app, support the work we're doing via our PayPal, and share this episode with your communities, be that on social media or in person. And I'm always super excited to know what your thoughts were on the episode. So do send me a DM on your thoughts if you have any. And I may even send the first person who DMs me a sneak peek of the next episode, which is an amazing conversation I'm really looking forward to sharing with you all. So till next time, Strictly Facts fam, as always, I hope you enjoyed this episode. Be well, take care, and little more. Thanks for tuning in to Strictly Facts. Visit strictlyfactspodcast.com for more information from each episode. Follow us at Strictly Facts Pod on Instagram and Facebook, and at Strictly Facts PD on Twitter.